financial literacy, and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham. Hello.
Well, hello, Jess. How's it going?
It's good. We are back for another week of Money Talk. What are we talking about this week?
We are. Well, let's talk about mortgages this week, but not mortgage rates, but how many people are holding their mortgage or even using it as an investment tool into their retirement years past age 65.
Okay.
Yeah, I bristle just having to say that you have a mortgage past age 65, but so many people do.
Well,
it's
longer before you can afford your first house with how much they are right now. And then you're talking 30, 40 year mortgage. If you refinance, you very well could have a mortgage that old or not that old at that age, I should say.
Yeah, well, the mortgage would be that old too. Yeah. Can you even believe that we are saying 40 year mortgages these days?
Yeah, well, you have to be able to afford the house.
Yeah, that's the sad truth is that, and they've been doing this in California for a while now, when house prices just were unaffordable. People can't make the payment. You can't sell the houses. You can't lend to them. What do? Stretch out the term. So that's kind of a similar thing as to what's going on for retirees these days, except that they're doing it in some cases proactively. And I'll give credit here to the New York Times, who had a great article on this. And they really saw both sides of the coin here, what some advisors say you should do and what others say you should do, right? They're completely different. So it might not be any surprise to you that I'm in the camp of, no, don't keep your debt into retirement.
Really? I thought it was going to be the other way for sure.
Well, you know, of course, the reason I say that is because, you know, if you have to pay $1,000, $2,000 a month in a mortgage in retirement, that's all money that's being depleted from your retirement nest egg.
Do you think that people go into a 40-year mortgage, though, thinking that they're going to be able to pay double to get it paid off quicker? They're just like, I'll take it for now, but I'll pay more because they think they're going to be making more?
Maybe. I mean, there are two sides to that coin also. A lot of times people will push themselves into a 15-year mortgage saying that they don't want to have it at retirement, or they don't want to have it for longer than 15 years. And so they take that higher payment to get rid of the debt in 15 years. And there's nothing wrong with that if you can afford it easily. But because of our program, because of the way that we see people pay off all their debt, including their mortgage, right, in less than 10 years, usually around 8 years for our average client, because we see it that way, because I see it that way differently now than I used to, I would say to most clients, look, if the interest rates are similar, they don't have to be the same, but if they're similar, you might want to take the 30-year mortgage and keep that payment low so that you don't box yourself into a higher payment in case something happens in the future. I don't know about you, but my crystal ball doesn't stretch out 30 years. You know, so, a lot of stuff's going to happen.
Tricky question for you. So if you have enough money to be able to take out a 15-year mortgage to be able to make that payment comfortably, would you be better off taking off a 30-year and then just paying it off quicker because it's going to make your credit better? And would that be a better way to go?
I'm going to say only if you're doing something like our program,
okay,
right, which patented. So I don't know if there's something like our program out there, but if you're doing something like this, where we are managing all of the debt together and accelerating those payoff schedules drastically, then I do recommend that very often because people can take that lower payment, put it in the system, and as we start to pay off their other debts and focus on cash reserves and retirement, that money from those other creditors that you don't owe any longer can start going to your mortgage. So you're not sending any more out monthly. You're used to that monthly outlay already. But at some point, your mortgage becomes a priority debt and gets paid off ahead of schedule.
Okay.
So you still have a similar effect if you follow the plan, but that's true of anything, if you follow the plan of paying your 15-year mortgage, right? But when people do it artificially, what they tend to think of is, okay, I'm going to make double payments, or I'm going to make an extra payment. I'm going to pay it biweekly because that's one extra payment a year. Those things are effective. There's no arguing that it's effective to pay off your debt early. It's just, what is the smartest way to do it? How can you do it with the least amount of pain and the quickest way possible? And that's what I'm looking for people, because yes, you take out your mortgage now, but you know what? There's going to be expenses. There's going to be job losses, health problems, children growing up, going to college, marriages, unexpected car expenses, your washing machine is going to break. Everything is going to happen.
Well,
in the future.
And as a new homeowner, you know, there's going to be home expenses.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And taxes are going to continue to do what?
Well, they aren't going down.
They aren't going down, folks. So taxes will go up. Cost of living will go up. Your insurances, all of that, they're all going to be on the rise. Mm-hmm. And as your house continues to rise in value, as we hope it does, we don't plan for it, but we hope it does. Guess what's going up with it? Your taxes and your insurance rates.
Mm-hmm.
So for a retiree who hasn't thought of that, let's say you're age 65, you're retiring and you're thinking, boy, I've got a great way to get the money out of my house.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to refinance my house, pull a bunch of cash out. I'll just make the mortgage payment. I won't ever plan to pay that mortgage off. I'll just tolerate it through my retirement years. Guess what happens? It looks good on paper now, but next year your taxes go up. The year mm-hmm. after that, your insurance goes up. Your cost of living rises. So that math that you did, that quick and dirty math that you did that said, wow, this is a great idea. It looks good now, but what does it look like 10 years forward, 5 mm-hmm. years forward, 15 years forward? And what does it look like if you plan to leave your home to your children and now it's mortgaged to the hilt?
Mm-hmm.
That's just the beginning of the rub. Now, there are lots of financial advisors out there, I believe, that are saying, do this. And the reason they're saying, do this, I'm not blaming them. I hate to say it, but they don't know what we know yet, right? I didn't know what we know yet 15 years ago,
mm-hmm.
right? So without knowing how to accelerate your debt payoff and balance that cash reserve and retirement picture, without really doing a comprehensive picture, what most financial advisors are trained to do, myself included prior to inventing this system, is to look at how much are you paying on your debt? How much are you earning in the market? Oh, well, gee, you're paying 3% on your wonderful mortgage that you got a year or two ago,
mm-hmm.
and you're making 6% in the market. It doesn't make any sense to take your assets out and pay off your mortgage. So we're just going to tell you to keep your mortgage and make the payment because we're always going to earn more than 3% in the market.
Mm-hmm.
Well, while that might be true, it might not be true. And in order to count on that, you have to take very conservative investments in order to rely on the fact that the market will out-earn your mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
You have to remember that these markets are moving all the time.
Right.
And that would mean that you take very conservative investments. In other words, maybe a CD or a treasury bill. Well, that might not align with your 30-year mortgage, right? You might get that for 5 years, but not 30.
Mm-hmm.
What happens at the end of 5 years if those rates go down and now they're paying 2% or 1% like they were not all that long ago and your mortgage is at 3? That mortgage doesn't look so appealing any longer.
So are you saying that it's always better to pay off the mortgage first rather than let that money stay in the market? Or it depends on the situation?
How long have you known me, Jess? Yes, I have never always said anything. I'm certainly not wishy-washy about this. If you can afford to pay your mortgage off, I believe it's a better thing for people to go into retirement debt-free.
Mm-hmm.
You can call it emotional comfort if you want to, but I've just seen way too many people who are carrying debt into their retirement years, thought it was going to be just great, and something happened, even as simple as we had to help our kids out. Our kids were faced with, you know, they're going to live in the street if we didn't pay their rent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you don't plan that into retirement, but you can't do it if you're saddled with that mortgage.
Huh. All right. So, but about refinancing, should that always be a last resort for refinancing?
Oh, no, I don't think it's a last resort. I think there are times that refinancing makes sense. Just maybe not as a strategy to get through retirement all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
So here's a good example. Somebody's got one of the mortgages they get today at 8.25% or whatever the rates are now,
yeah.
whatever the ugly rates are today. And, you know, they take it because they've got a downsize, for instance, and they decide they're going to keep, we're talking about retirees now, so they decide they're going to keep their money in their brokerage account or their assets liquid enough in case they need it, rather than put it on the down payment of a house. So they downsize, they get a new mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
They decide, maybe with the help of an advisor, maybe not, it's a good idea to just do it this way and only pay the mortgage payment without any idea of ever paying the mortgage off. And 2 years from now, the rates are at 3%. Do you refinance? Probably.
Yeah.
You probably do. You get the better rate. But what you need to remember when you're refinancing, I always try to tell people the one or two things that nobody else is telling them that they just somehow escapes mainstream knowledge. And the thing that you have to remember mostly is if you ever plan to pay that mortgage off, and I realize some people just accept it. They just say, I'm just going to pay this like rent the rest of my life. But if you ever plan to pay that mortgage off, you need to remember that when you refinance, these loans are front heavy. In other words, the interest is up front. So now if you've been paying your mortgage for 5 or 10 years and you're finally starting to chip away at the principal, you know, when you get that statement, you look at it and it says X number of dollars to the interest and X number of dollars to the principal. If you're finally starting to make some headway and you refinance, thank you for playing. You're going back, to the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
Most of your payment is going to be interest again, because that's how the loans are created. That's what the amortization schedules look like. So there's so many things to think of when you're thinking of this. And there are reasons that you might consider doing this. But what I'm trying to make a point of is I don't think it should be your number one or even at toward the top of your list retirement strategy. I'm just going to refinance my house, take the cash out, and that's how I'm going to do retirement. If there's any other way for you to do it, and there usually is, there's probably a better plan than just taking your mortgage out and carrying it through retirement because you think or are told or you hope that the market is always going to out-earn your mortgage rate because there's so many other factors besides what your investments are earning.
And it's been all over the place. We haven't really been able to tell if it's going to be up, down. It seems like it's been down. Yeah, we're going to talk more about this coming up in the second half. But first, I want to get your phone number.
Sure. It's 413-773-3333.
And as always, you can visit hugyourmoney.com. We haven't mentioned in a while, but I want to mention that if you have a question for the money doctor, you can send your question in at info@hugyourmoney.com, or you can send it to me at jtyler@whmp.com. Then if we use your question on the air, you can get a copy of the book.
Retire debt and retire well. You bet. That's my favorite part, is when people write in with questions.
I love it too.
Answer them on the air.
All right. We'll be back with part two of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, right here on WHMP.
I'm not sure if opposites attract, but most couples differ greatly in their views about household finances. I'm Francis Ram, the Money Doctor, with Hug Your Money. Money is a very volatile topic, and most seem to either argue about it or rarely discuss it. A sort of division of labor emerges, one partner becoming the steward of household finances, the other less directly involved. This arrangement may work until a stressor is introduced: college expenses, budgeting issues, impending retirement, etc. That's when sparks can fly. Each person's perspective is quite different, and it's likely only a short-term solution, if any, will arise. The HUG plan presents an easy-to-follow, long-term solution that helps get both partners on the same page, alleviating stress and inspiring them to manage their finances successfully. I'm Frances Ray, I'm the Money Doctor. We now offer advanced tools and financial coaching using our patented system, all under one umbrella. For more information and to schedule your free consultation, visit our website at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, and we're talking mortgages.
We are talking mortgages. We're talking mortgages into your retirement years and what that can do for you or not do for you. And so I just want to make the point that we're not talking about reverse mortgages here. A reverse mortgage is where you give up the equity in your home, you sign a contract to a company who then pays you instead of you paying the mortgage, right? They pay you every month. And you are basically spending down the equity in your home.
That's those late night commercials we see, right? We're back on commercials again this week. But the late night commercials you see, I always think they're ripping off the elderly. Is that true or not?
Well, it might be true in some cases. And in some cases, it's a good idea for people. Okay. It depends. So the things you need to know about that is, you know, tell your kids if they're expecting to inherit your house and you've got a reverse mortgage, they need to be aware that they're going to get in the same week some news that their parents died and that they owe a mortgage in order to access that house again, because that mortgage then has to get paid off. So you're basically racking up debt, but you're doing it with a reverse mortgage.
You're basically leaving it to your kids.
The mortgage, not the house.
And yes. So, but are the kids responsible for the mortgage, even though they're not on it, if they inherit the house?
Not directly, but somebody has to be responsible for that mortgage. So if the kids want to keep the house, then they have to pay off that mortgage. If they don't care and they sell the house, then the mortgage has to be repaid, right? That's how that company that lent the money got repaid. So those are tricky, but it's not what we're talking about today. But I just wanted to make it clear that when I'm saying don't use a mortgage as your retirement strategy or as your primary retirement strategy, I'm not necessarily talking about reverse mortgages. I'll give you one example of a time when a reverse mortgage might make good sense for someone.
Okay.
Let's say that they don't have any kids, or that their children don't want the house, or they don't need the house. Mm-hmm. And the parents are living on minimal income, and they don't intend to downsize or do anything else. Or even in downsizing. Sometimes people use a reverse mortgage as a way to downsize. Mm-hmm. But then that might be a way for them to gain the equity out of their house, as long as nobody's expecting to get it in the end. Then they get rid of their mortgage because the company takes it over, and the company pays them a monthly payment as a reverse mortgage. Sometimes that can make very good sense for somebody, but I fear that too many people do it when they don't understand it well. And mm-hmm. So when you said, are they ripping people off? Maybe not intentionally, but I think there are plenty of reverse mortgages that are sold to people who maybe had a better or a different solution.
Well, it seems like always when you're in a situation where you're desperate for money, good choices are not made. Like you're just kind of thinking of the only thing that's going to get you money quick.
Yeah. Well, that's true of any kind of choice, not just financial choices. Whenever we're making decisions emotionally and from our gut and under pressure, mm-hmm. under duress.
Are you talking about being hangry?
Well, as a matter of fact, that's yes. one of them. That's a great analogy because, you know, what we eat and how we spend money are very, very much parallel, mm-hmm. right? I say that about myself. I have this really strong survival instinct in my belly. And so when I get hungry, I really do. When I get hungry, I want food.
Yeah,
I have
you're
to
clear.
Be careful. Yeah, I have to be careful to make sure that I have things on hand that I can eat. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm hungry, but I'm having an apple. Or I'm hungry, but I'm having a salad. And if I don't plan that out in advance, I can tell you honestly, I mean, I'm just, you know, here I am, folks, real human. I'm going to tell you honestly, if I'm hungry and the thing in the kitchen is a chocolate bar, I'm eating it.
Exactly.
Right? So I have to plan in advance. How am I going to manage that? And mm-hmm. the same thing is true about your retirement, right? You have to plan this in advance. The thing is, it should not all be on your shoulders. One of the things that is hardest to do is to make plans when it's your money, mm-hmm. right? That's where a coach or a financial advisor should come into play and be able to help you. But they have to know this stuff. And I don't think we're teaching it to financial advisors. What we're teaching is if you're making this much money in the market, which by the way, I'm probably making money on, and you're paying that much mortgage, gee, it looks pretty close to me, but I'm going to say, let's keep the money in the market because that's your earning power. Mm-hmm. And to a large extent, they're right. Yes, I want to keep the money in the market and have your earning power, but I don't want to do it at the cost of risking your home, which is what we're talking about. Mm. Now, let's suppose you do this. Let's suppose that you think a good retirement strategy is to take out the mortgage on your home, take the cash out, whether you're calling it a home equity line or a first mortgage, it's still secured by your home and mm-hmm. it's still a mortgage. Don't just because it has a different name doesn't mean it's not a mortgage, right? People argue that point a lot with me. No, it's a home equity line. Uh-huh.
Same
it's
thing.
A mortgage. Yeah, well, we used to call them second mortgages and that creeped people out. Mm-hmm. So now we call them HELOCs.
We just put a prettier name on it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, if that's your plan is to take that money out and you do that, let's suppose it looks good for a couple of years. And then a time rolls around where you had planned to work through retirement. Gee, you love your job. You're not going to sit in a rocking chair. You really are going to keep working. Well, you know what? You might not be in control of that. Mm-hmm. Somebody might say we're downsizing and you don't have a job any longer, or you might run your own business and find out you just can't get the employees to do the work to keep the doors open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You thought you would sell your business and it's not saleable, or you thought you would pass your business to your kids who have no interest in mm-hmm. it.
Yeah.
There's so many things that you think will happen in retirement, but just as you pointed out, Jess, the hardest time to decide that is when you're in the thick of it, when you can't see the forest for the trees. Mm-hmm. When you're looking at that retirement date, counting the days, saying, oh, if I check this box, if I move that there, and if I do this, maybe if I refinance my house, I can hit that target date. Oh, I cannot wait to take that vacation and tell my friends mm-hmm. I've retired.
Yeah.
Right. And that looks good for a while. And then these kinds of things happen, like your kids come home from college and say, Mom, Dad, you know, I need a place to stay. I can't afford rent, or I'm getting a divorce, or somebody's spouse dies, mm-hmm. or there's some major event that none of us want to plan for. Somebody gets really ill. You know, there's some reason that you can't live where you are. Maybe you're a renter. You're not a person who pays a mortgage, and your rent has just gotten astronomically high, and you can't qualify for rental assistance or anything, and you have to move somewhere else. Mm-hmm. That's going to be a major financial change for you. And speaking of that, some of the people that get hit hardest with this idea about refinancing their mortgage or carrying their mortgage into retirement are people with lower income. Sadly, very often people of color, not always, but the statistics show us that area of people tends to get hit harder with this because in some way, oddly enough, talk about the things you don't think of, right? They very often don't have the extra money hanging around to keep up their property. So they might not redo their kitchen and redo their bathroom or, you know, make their yard look perfect or whatever, because they're busy just trying to eke out a living. And then the times change, they go to refinance that property or borrow against it, and they have a harder time doing it because the property value isn't rising at the same level as maybe somebody who had plenty of cash, who's done all these things to keep their property up. And they have higher expenses to do it, right? A dollar for somebody who barely ekes out a living is a lot harder to come up with than for somebody who has plenty of money.
Right.
So
right.
If you have to redo your roof and you have plenty of money, you know, $30,000 is not, you know, you grouse about it for a moment, but you sign the line, dotted line, or you give them the money and you get your roof redone. Mm-hmm. If you're somebody who can't afford that, you're in big trouble.
Yeah, you're going to lose money in the end.
Yeah. And turning around and saying, well, I'm going to refinance my house again can be problematic because now it has to pass an appraisal. The bankers have to be happy with it. Maybe it's not in the condition to do that. And trying to argue the case that, well, I want the refinance because I'm going to repair my roof and do this is sometimes hard if your income can't float it. So you can see I'm going in a big circle here, right? But the circle I'm going in is because, boy, I just think it's so sad to put your house at risk in order to retire when there could be a much better way to do it. And if you can imagine that, you know, your dreams are dashed because something happens in the future, like, I hate to bring this up, but what happens if Social Security has a problem, right? We all think Social Security is going to last because it's political suicide for it not to.
Right.
But they're doing it already, delaying the years you can retire. They're pretty soon they're going to start delaying how much money you can get out of it. They've already done it for teachers, right? If you paid into the retirement system for Social Security, but you've taught most of your life, guess what? Thank you very much for the money, right? We're applying that windfall thing to you. So, you know, we cannot expect that stuff to just continue to last on and on and on. And so I think it's really important for people to get all of the details about this and not just see it as what it looks like today in today's dollars.
I have a question for you. This is a little off topic, but just a financial advisor question, and it could pertain to this. But how much more difficult is it for you when a couple comes in to make these decisions versus a single person? Like, I can't imagine every husband and wife, especially ones that have been together 30, 40 years, or maybe they do, are in agreement on what to do about retirement. Or when it's joint money decisions, it seems like as a financial advisor, you're part marriage counselor, it seems.
Well, I'm not a licensed marriage counselor, but I sure hear a lot of problems. Yeah, that's a very interesting question. It is a different process for people. The couples, most often by the time I talk to them, have formed some kind of an agreement. They may not be completely on the same page, and sometimes they're very opposite, especially when there's a big age difference, as is more and more common these days. You know, where one person's ready to retire and the other person is saying, but I'm going to keep working. And one person is saying, but I want to travel. And the other person is saying, but I can't.
Right.
You know, and so there's a lot of finding of middle ground when that happens. And interestingly enough, for single people, you would think that they're just like, hey, I don't have anybody else to worry about, so here's my retirement plan. But interestingly enough, it seems to me that they worry even more. They don't feel like they have the safety net of a second income.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
They very often have children that they want to go and visit or take care of, and it's going to be harder on one income. They sometimes will tell me that part of their retirement plan is that they're going to meet somebody. More often than not, they'll add a fictitious person in the future.
Right.
As part of their retirement plan. Yeah. And this person is always going to be affluent and take care of them. And nobody says, I'm going to meet somebody. They're going to be a deadbeat and they're going to live on my couch and I'm going to have to take care of them too. You know,
the kid's going to be an NFL star.
Children. Yeah, it is a different decision. But I think to answer your question, more and more these days, I see as couples, I see the people as more and more independent of one another. They're in a unit, they're a team, and they're making decisions together. But, you know, 15 years ago, couples would come in or call me and they would be like, my husband's going to retire and I need to understand how this works because I'm the one who takes care of the money.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be it. You know, sometimes they'd say, well, I have a job too, but I'm not really contributing to anything. Mm-hmm. And even today, we've talked about this, women are not contributing anywhere as much as their male counterparts are.
Into the living expenses every month or into retirement?
No, into their retirement. They tend to see the money in the household as his retirement with theirs being ancillary. Mm-hmm. And that's hard when a couple splits, right? Or one dies or something happens. So, but what I see is that they talk to me in a more independent way within the marriage unit about, well, she's going to retire then, or I'm going to retire now, or he's going to retire in 5 years, but I'm not going to. And instead of when my husband retires, mm-hmm. this is what life will look like. Now they're both trying to figure it out within the marital context. And so you always ask the most interesting questions. The ones I love come from real people, you know, like you who aren't financial geeks who just say, but this is what happens in my life. Does that happen to other people?
Right. Exactly. Well, so much good information here. I know that people probably will have questions. So how can they get a hold of you?
Well, I hope so. They can reach us at 413-773-3333. Or on the web at hugyourmoney.com.
And as we talked about before, I really would love if people send questions in. I do have some questions saved for you. So we're going to do a question show coming up really soon. And then, like we said, if you get one of your questions that get on the air, you answer them, and I go, oh, I knew that. then you're going to get a copy of the book. And the book is kind of, this is a reissue, correct?
It is, actually.
Oh, you have a copy right there?
I have a copy right here. Look, Retire Debt and Retire Well. And we reissued it because we kept the same stories that everybody loved, but we added retirement information and budget information and more things about what are relevant today. And so retire sooner, live better, debt-free, including your mortgage, which after all was the point today.
Exactly. And so I've got to say, it's such an easy read too. And I love that you kind of dispersed real stories in with the advice because it just made it fun to read.
Well, thank you. Thanks. That was the idea, is that, you know, we call this financial fitness, not, you know, here's how to trade the market, because it's about real people and their real money and being financially fit in your lifestyle.
So if you have a question and you want a chance to win a copy of the book, you can send those questions into info@hugyourmoney.com. You could also send them to me here at JTYLER@WHMP.com. And you can go to hugyourmoney.com and get a hold of Dr. Frances Ram. Thank you so much. This was fun.
Thank you, Jess.
All right. We'll be back next week again with another episode of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Ram, right here on WHMP.
Have you heard about Get the Tea? It's an online herbal supplement company with high quality standards. You cannot find these in stores. They carry cleansing teas and targeted herbal supplements for all your health needs. Go to GetTheTea.com today to order yours. Health shouldn't be put off. It should be a priority. And check out their specials page for sale items. That's GetTheTea.com. Enter code TEA123 for 10% off exclusively for my listeners. GetTheTea.com, code TEA123. Order today.
This is Frances Rayum, the Money Doctor. Now you can become 100% debt-free, budget successfully, and retire well, all under the Hug Your Money umbrella.
Well, I tried another outfit out of Florida. Their help was to take my money, and you're on your own with problems that we create for you. This, it's different. It makes me more confident. The ads that I have heard on the radio were true. She's honestly truly concerned that people's lives improve by getting a handle on their finances. I actually have more peace about where my finances are going from here. Yeah, it's like light at the end of the tunnel that's not a train coming your way.
Hug works best when we work together. Schedule your free consultation with a Hug Your Money coach today. Visit hugyourmoney.com. Hug Your Money. So unique, it's patented.
Financial literacy and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham.
Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham. I'm Jess Tyler. Good morning.
Good morning, Jess. How are you?
I am excellent. And today we're talking about life insurance policies, which is a coincidence because I saw this commercial and I wanted to get your take on it.
It was this commercial that came on that basically said, like, if you're overweight and don't take care of yourself, call Big Dave because we'll insure even you. And I just thought, is this working? But it must be because they're advertising.
So I wanted to talk about that. And then the other question I had was, is it ever enough if you just take the life insurance option you get from your employer because it's so cheap?
So what you get from your employer, let's say it's 3 times your salary. Is it enough? Well, that's one question we'll go over about how you figure out how much is enough. But is it enough for you? Maybe. And maybe while you're still working, what you need to understand is what happens to it when you leave work. Do you get to keep a reduced amount? Like, let's say you have $150,000 of coverage while you're working. If you leave, does your employer say you get to keep a $5,000, say, paid up policy, or you get to pay the premiums on it and keep it?
Mm-hmm.
So they can say anything they want about it, basically. It's one of your benefits. So you might want to ask your HR people, you know, what happens to my life insurance when I leave? So that you know, because one of the biggest things about life insurance is, and everybody will tell you this, if you buy it when you're young and healthy, it will be cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
The rub is that when you're young and healthy, you often can't afford much life insurance.
Or you're not really thinking about it. You know, you think you're going to be young and healthy forever.
Yeah, it's true. But okay. So let's talk about Big Dave for a minute.
Okay.
What he's talking about, I'm assuming, and I've not heard the ad, but I'm assuming that he's talking about something we call guaranteed issue life insurance. So just to give you a rough overview, there's so many different kinds of life insurance. There's whole life. There's variable life. There's universal life. There's variable universal life. There's term insurance.
It gets confusing.
Yeah, it gets confusing. And most people don't start by saying, what kind of life insurance do I need?
Mm-hmm.
They start by saying, how much life insurance do I need? And then the usual comment is, I'll just get term because it's cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
Or, no, I want permanent insurance because I don't want it to end.
Can you explain the difference between term and permanent or term and life?
Absolutely. So term and permanent. The terminate one is where you're going to die immediately, and the perm one is where you get your hair done.
Right.
No, term and permanent life insurance. Okay, so term insurance is just what it sounds like. It's there for a certain term.
Okay.
Right? It might be 10-year term, 15-year term, 20-year term, 30-year term.
That basically means you have to die within that time period.
Not wow, that's bluntly. A little harsh.
Little harsh. I didn't pretty that up at all.
Jess.
I know. But that's basically what it means, right?
I don't think anybody would buy a policy that says they have to die within the term.
If you don't die within this 10 years, you're getting nothing.
But that's kind of how it works, actually. If you don't die within that period of time, the premiums you've paid are gone, right? They've been paying for death benefit only, no cash value, and the policy ends. Okay, so that's term insurance. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about how term can benefit you in a number of ways, but that's how term insurance works versus some sort of permanent insurance, like any kind of whole life, variable life, universal life, variable universal life, those things that build cash value in some way.
Okay.
That's the basic difference. If you don't know if you have term or you have some whole life product and you can't find the words on your statement, do you build cash value or do you not?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the gray area, there's always a gray area. You might have something like, say, a universal life policy built on a term chassis. So you might be paying for permanent insurance, but as cheaply as you can.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still permanent. It's just not building any or much cash value.
Okay.
So it is. It's a hot mess, right? Insurance
for sure.
Is a hot mess. But there are ways to sort through it. So that's the difference between term and permanent insurance. And permanent insurance, we would call some form of whole life contract. As
okay.
I said, universal life, variable life, any of those are under the permanent insurance umbrella.
And the whole life is obviously going to be more expensive.
Yes, it is going to be more expensive. And depending on the kind of whole life you buy, It will cost you more in premiums than some others. For instance, a universal life policy may be less expensive than what we call a plain vanilla whole life policy. The question isn't always one of expense, though. The question is often one of value.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how expensive was your term policy if you paid for it for 25 years and didn't use it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It did cover your death benefit, and that's what you wanted it to do. But now you're 25 years older, you may not be in good health, and you might be in the market for insurance again, and now you're going to really pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas some whole life types of policies, universal life is a good example, where you might be able to pay for it for a period of time, it builds up enough cash value to start paying for itself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still permanent insurance. It's not that one of these is better than the other. It's that you have to find the right fit for you.
Is there a time that you would recommend someone get either a term or a whole life insurance policy? Is there a certain age or other factors?
Well, if you're going to die, I think it's a good idea to have some life insurance.
But I mean, would you take it out when you're 30 or would you take it out when you're 60?
Yeah, clearly taking it out when you're younger helps. But life changes. You might need a lot more insurance when you're 30 and you have three small children at home and not a lot of assets and a wife or a husband that maybe can't support themselves without your income.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, that's a cause for life insurance, right?
Yeah.
You might take it out if you have a business partner who can't run the business successfully if you die without some real capital. So you might take out life insurance and make the business partner the beneficiary on it. So if something happens to you, the business can continue to run, thereby perhaps supporting your family.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many reasons to buy life insurance. Some people will buy it to build cash value tax-free. If they buy a whole life policy and it's funded a specific way, it doesn't breach some guidelines, which you know upfront, you know, then you might build cash value in there tax-free. That I could go on for about an hour about, but I won't. I'll just say, if someone is selling you a policy telling you you're going to be able to take that cash out tax-free in the future, in my opinion, it better be a big policy. It better be big enough to make that worthwhile. Because when you get these really large policies, you know, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, $30,000 a month going into a policy like that, you can build a pile of money that you can take out tax-free in the future.
Do you get tax on it when you take it out or no?
Not if you take it out by loaning it against the policy, which is why I say the policy has to be so large.
Okay.
Because if you still want some death benefit, you want to be able to borrow some money against the policy and still keep your death benefit. So there's another interesting part. When you take money out of your whole life type, out of your permanent life insurance policy, how do you do it? Some people will cash it in. They get a policy, it's got some cash value in it. They see the cash value and they don't think they need the death benefit. So they cash it in and they take the money. That becomes taxable.
Okay.
That's then a taxable event. Now, I have to say, of course, my disclaimer, I'm not an accountant, right? But that becomes taxable. If you borrow the money against your own death benefit, it's a tax-free transaction as long as you didn't breach that MECA guideline we're talking about. So let's say that you have a $5 million policy and it's built up, I don't know, $300,000 of capital. These are ridiculous numbers, but let's just use them. If you take out, you know, $200,000 as a loan against the policy, you don't have to pay it back. You're borrowing your own death benefit. It will accrue interest. So the loan will continue to grow against your death benefit. But if you die, they just subtract it from the death benefit.
So I'm assuming that you
$4.8 million.
I'm assuming that you would recommend then always borrowing against and not taking it out and getting that big tax penalty.
Usually, yes.
Okay.
I mean, there are times that it makes sense. I've seen people who have built up more cash value than their death benefit is.
Oh.
You know, it's an old policy that a parent bought for them when they were a child or something. They've built up, you know, $15,000 of cash value and they only have $5,000 death benefit. Well, if they die, the company's going to pay that death benefit. So they might as well take out the cash value now, use it for something, maybe buy more death benefit with it if they have to, right? So there, I mean, it's tricky. What you need to do is find an insurance agent that you can trust who's speaking to you and helping you sort these things out in some way that makes sense. I mean, us trying to go through, you know, a life insurance tutorial in half an hour is tricky at best and certainly not, you know, conclusive. So yeah, I said I wanted to talk about Big Dave for a minute.
Okay.
So Big Dave is talking, I think, about another kind of life insurance which is called guaranteed issue or guarantee issue, depending on who you speak with. Guaranteed issue is something you see it from AARP and some other companies. Sometimes you'll get a flyer in the mail that says no exam necessary, you know, answer three medical questions or no questions, no exam necessary. And there's always some tricky phrase like your premiums will never go up or your death benefit can never go down. Right. Usually what the way these things happen is, yes, they will issue them on a guaranteed basis. For instance, I've seen people who have somebody in their family who is terminally ill. They know it. There's no money to pay for a funeral. And the person's been given 2 years to live. Right. Well, they might roll the dice and say, we're going to take out a guaranteed issue product because they're not going to get issued any other kind of insurance. And we're going to make these premium payments, hoping, of course, that their loved one lives longer than the entry period, which is usually 2 or 3 years. And so the way it works is something like this. Usually, you're going to pay in your premiums. If the person dies after, say, the three-year mark, you're going to get the whole death benefit. So let's say you're buying a $10,000 policy and you're paying in, you know, $200 a month or whatever the premium is. If they die after the three-year mark, they've basically made the grade and you're going to get paid the full death benefit. If they die prior to the three-year mark, you will usually, I know AARP had a product like this, I don't know if they still do, but you would get all your premiums back that you paid plus some interest. And they had a pretty good thing. It was like if they died in the second year, don't quote me on this, but it was something like you got 25% more than your money back or whatever. So you get a reduced death benefit, but it still might be worth doing. Because you know, you're going to get all your premiums back anyway if you take that kind of policy. But read the small print because it may not be that way. I mean, I remember that as being one of the better guaranteed issue policies you could buy. But that's, I think, what Big Dave's talking about. And it isn't that people don't want to go through the physicals, although I'm sure, you know, people get frightened about that. But it's pretty minimal what they'll do. They'll usually send a paramed to your house. They'll ask you some questions by phone, you know, they'll get your doctor's records if they need to. But if you're in that situation, maybe not even terminally ill, but just let's say you have a heart problem. Okay, well, you might go for traditional insurance and you might get what we call rated. In other words, you might get a higher premium because you're seen as a higher risk, or you might get declined. If you're declined, you might be calling Big Dave, all right? or preferably searching the market for the best terms you can get on a guaranteed issue contract.
Okay, I have another question on this, which we will get to in the second half. But first, I do want to get your phone number.
Absolutely, Jess. It's 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com as well. We'll be right back with the second half of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. It's coming up on WHMP.
Every day, financial ads claiming to be different from the competition. Are they? I'm Francis Ram, the Money Doctor, and I'm about to make a bold statement. I believe the thing to focus on isn't their uniqueness, it's yours. No one has the same financial situation or needs as you, and no one can help us help you better than you. But the truth is, when it comes to managing money, most of us are not as successful as we'd like to be. No matter how focused we are, it's almost impossible to separate emotion, and being in a relationship can further compound the issue. That's why I developed Hug Your Money. Financial coaching coupled with online software and tools to empower you to manage money wisely. We guide you every step of the way to resolve immediate issues and plan for your financial future with modeling scenarios. So whether it's debt, budget, retirement planning, or a financial crisis, having a Hug coach in your corner is like having a new best financial friend. Hug Your Money is as unique as you are. In fact, it's patented. Visit hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. Hi, I'm always happy when you're still there.
Well, and I can still access my life insurance policy, evidently, if I didn't die within my term.
I had a question that I wanted to ask you kind of about Big Dave. So when you're laying in bed at 2 a.m. and can't sleep and you see those infomercials that are kind of the same thing as Big Dave, where it's like, call now, we're going to guarantee this. It's $5 a month and you can get however much. How do you know if it's a scam or not? Because a lot of those just seem way too good to be true.
Well, they may not be a scam. Like, for instance, Big Dave, who we're giving a lot of free advertising to, and I have nothing, I have no idea whether Big Dave's product is any good or not. So please, you know that we're using him as an example here because you had seen that commercial. It's not necessarily that they're a scam, but they may not be the best deal for you. And that's okay. where I would go to somebody that has some real clout and something to lose, like an AARP who has such a big volume of people that they go and they get really good rates from someone, mm-hmm. you know, from a company. I think I remember that contract I was talking to you about was underwritten by New York Life, but it was special terms for AARP. They okay. were competitive terms to New York Life's own policy because they're so big, they can flex their muscle mm-hmm. and they can get something like that done. So when you're looking for something like that, you certainly can go to an independent broker, right? Rather than just dialing up the phone, you could call somebody like us or any independent broker and say, I'm looking for some life insurance. Here's my situation. What do you think would work for me? And get some quotes. There are some companies that you can call and just, you know, pretty much any company that you can call and get quotes from. Mm-hmm. I would say it's been my experience. It's not necessarily always true, but when you get the flyer in the mail that says, just check this box and pay this much and there's no premiums or anything due, you know, maybe go shopping.
Yeah.
It's, you know, that's a little too easy to just, for me to just say, yeah, tick the box and pay the money.
So I was going to say, you know, if you're listening to this show right now and you don't have life insurance and you're thinking about getting it, what are the first steps? What are the first things you would look for? Obviously, I think you said, you know, call a broker.
Yeah, I think so. But before you do that, I think start to think about why you need life insurance, if you need life insurance, and what it does for you. Here's some examples.
Okay.
Let's say, as I said earlier, maybe you're a person with a family, and if you pass away, they cannot make ends meet without you, mm-hmm. right? Okay, that's a reason to put some life insurance on yourself. Now, people will say, well, it's expensive. I don't want to pay those premiums. Think about it this way. If you were paying $100 a month for a premium, I forget whether it's affordable for you or not, just for this exercise. But let's say you're paying $100 a month for a premium and you're buying a $100,000 term policy. Mm-hmm. How long would you have to shell out $100 a month to lose the game? I mean, you're leveraging your money by so much when you buy life insurance. Mm-hmm. You pay $100 and you die tomorrow, they pay $100,000.
Right.
That's the life insurance game. You're probably never going to pay in $100,000 in premiums at $100 a month, right, to cover that death benefit. So that's the idea, is that you can use your money to leverage it. So that's one example of when you might need life insurance. Another is, let's suppose you have 3 kids at home mm-hmm. and, you know, your spouse could do okay, but the kids can't get through college without that money. Mm-hmm. That's a reason for life insurance. Here's a very simple one. You have plenty of money. You don't care. Your spouse is going to be fine. Mm-hmm. Really want to spend down those assets, you know, for your burial and for other things? Or do you just want to leverage your money and spend a few dollars and buy some life insurance? They're going to get the proceeds. Beneficiaries get life insurance proceeds tax free. So, you know, you might, let's say you're a multimillionaire. So pick up a few million of life insurance for next to nothing. You know, mm-hmm. it doesn't cost you much to do it. And if you die, that money is available tax free instead of them having to liquidate assets to do things like pay a mortgage on your home until it gets through probate mm-hmm. or on your investment properties or something like that. We talked about a key man policy or a buyout policy for a partner. You might need life insurance for that. When do you not need life insurance? Well, if you're not concerned about your burial costs at all, some people prepay their burial costs mm-hmm. and they simply don't care. They don't have assets to protect. They don't care about, they don't have any debt. Mm-hmm. Right? Their spouse is going to be okay. They don't have children going through college. I hate to say it, but I'm an example of this, right? I'm a single person with no children, no worry. You know, I can pay for whatever I want, right? But I have life insurance. Mm-hmm. And I have life insurance because it leverages my money. Why would I not spend a pittance, relatively speaking, and leave somebody a lot of life insurance? And in my case, you know, it's family members and charity, mm-hmm. right? So you might not need life insurance, but you might want life insurance. I can fund a school or a project about Bengals or whatever I want to fund with my life insurance when I die for almost no money, and they're going to get it tax-free.
Mm-hmm. Which is smart.
So, yeah. So to simplify that, I think you need life insurance first to cover your burial costs, second to cover any income that might be needed, third, to protect your assets and send your kids to college, right? But that's income related. And fourth is just because you want to. You want to give back to somebody. Mm-hmm. And rather than leaving them all your assets, you leave them a life insurance policy. It's a great way to give to charity, for one thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if your spouse comes to you and says they want to take out a $5 million policy on you, at what point should you go to the police? I feel like this is how every Dateline starts.
Well, you know, that's an interesting point, because especially in our state, we have some rules about who has to sign and when they have to sign, right? Like for your retirement. So, you know, I don't know that you go to the police. I mean, I have a couple that came to mind immediately when you said that, because he did call me and say, it was $10 million, but I want a $10 million policy on
my
wife.
You and Keith Morrison are going to be sitting down together very soon. I'm just letting you know
now. Oh, my gosh. Well, I hope not, because I have her on video saying, yes, I want it. And then she said, but I want a $10 million policy on him.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was reasonable. And we actually talked about it, and it turned out that they didn't quite need that. I think we did 8.5 on each of them or whatever. But whatever it was, we found something within their price range that covered them both. And we talked about all those reasons that they have to have it or want it. And again, for them, it was largely about protecting a business, protecting assets, making sure their kids were okay when they were gone. What if their kids ran the business into the ground? Can they still survive?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The real kinds of life things that people think about. I want to talk about term insurance before we end this, though, because, you know, it gets a bit of a bad rap sometimes, or mm-hmm. too good of a rap, depending on who you speak with. Because people say, well, term insurance, it's cheap, it covers my death benefit, it's great, and I'm not going to need it when I'm older mm-hmm. because I'll have plenty of money.
Okay, we hope.
It might be true.
Right.
But what happens if you do need it?
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing. We talked about guaranteed life, guaranteed issue, because I don't think people really know the nuts and bolts of it. And for term insurance, I want to bring up this topic, because this is maybe the most important reason to pick up term insurance when you can't afford or don't want a more expensive policy.
Okay.
Most term insurance is what we call guaranteed renewable or guaranteed convertible.
Okay.
And what that means is that when you're young and healthy and you can afford the $25 a month premium to buy your $250,000 policy,
mm-hmm.
you are protecting yourself in the future, yourself, not your family. I mean, you are protecting your family, but you're protecting yourself in the future in case you become uninsurable or ratable. In other words, let's suppose you're young and healthy now, you pick up $25 a month and you pay the term.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say it's a 30-year term policy.
Okay.
And you're 25 years old. By the time you're 55, you might have some health problems.
Mm-hmm.
You might have diabetes, for instance. It doesn't have to be some terminal disease, right? Maybe you just have AFib, okay? But that might mean that you may not be eligible for reasonably priced or eligible at all for a whole life policy or even another term policy.
Mm-hmm.
However, the term policy you have is probably guaranteed convertible, which means that they will have to, even if you're terminally ill, they have to give you, convert that insurance if you ask them to, some or all of it, you get to choose,
mm-hmm.
To some form of permanent insurance. And you're going to get it based on your healthy rate you bought it at mm-hmm. when you were 25.
So that's kind of a benefit to buying early.
It is, because if you got, let's say, a preferred non-smoker rate, you know, you're out there running marathons and you don't have to be that. You just have to be in good health and mm-hmm. non-smoking. But if you get preferred non-smoker rates, you're going to get a very inexpensive premium. Get to age 55 or 60 or 65, and now you maybe have some health problems, you're still going to get a preferred non-smoker rate, but you will have to pay for it at your current age.
Mm-hmm.
Still, it's a great deal if you want to convert some of it. And what some people do is they pick up, you know, $500,000 term when they're young. And by the time they're getting to retirement, they're looking at, okay, my term policy is going to end. Maybe I should convert some of it. Maybe they convert $50,000 to mm-hmm. permanent insurance and they let the rest of it go or whatever. Or they do some sort of term and whole life blend. But it's really worth it for people with a term policy. Anybody listening to this who has a term policy, who is just living under the idea that my term policy will end and then what?
Mm-hmm.
You should check to see if it's guaranteed convertible and maybe get some quotes from your broker. Hey, what would it cost me to convert 25,000 of this? 50,000, 10,000? What can I do? Mm-hmm. Find out what your options are while you have that term insurance in place. Don't just let it end without knowing what it does. That's perhaps the most underexercised value point I could give you today is to check on your term insurance and see if you want to start converting pieces of it. You could even convert, you know, I want to convert $25,000 this year. Mm-hmm. I'm going to convert another $25,000 next year, things like that. And your broker should be able to help you do that.
Quick question about back to what we talked about in the beginning with the employee that usually offers you if you want to do one, two, three times your salary for insurance. If you have a separate whole life insurance, do you need to do that? I mean, it seems like with the employee, it's really cheap to be able to do that. Is it smart to just do that in addition?
Yeah, I think for the money they charge you. I mean, it was $7 a right. paycheck or something to get three times your salary. I think it is a really good idea to do that. You do, however, want to check with your HR people and see if your employer is offering you accidental death benefit mm-hmm. Or real life insurance. I mean, I've seen some people, believe it or not, paying a premium that they thought and it looked like it was high enough to be real life insurance. And really, it was for an accidental policy. It only paid if they were in an accident or if they lost one limb or one eye or mm-hmm. one hand, you know.
Okay.
And they were paying these premiums for something that may or may not ever happen, which is fine if they're really cheap premiums. You know, you see that ADD
right.
on your, you know, it's $1.15 or whatever. That might be worth it. But just know what you got. I mean, that's the whole deal is ask your broker, ask your HR person, have some independent person take a look at it and help you sort through it. But know what you have. And really, it can be such a tool for people. I mean, you know, we don't talk about it very often because it sort of is one of those, I don't know, it's sort of one of those background things. People go, yeah, and I have some life insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And then I say, do you know if it's whole life or term? I don't know. Does it build any cash value? I don't know. I think so.
Yeah.
How much is it? I'll say, how much is the cash value? They'll say $200,000. I say, that's the cash value? I don't know. That's what they pay when I die. That's your death benefit, right? So we just don't talk about it. Nobody wants to talk about dying. And nobody certainly wants to talk mm-hmm. about buying a policy that they must die within the term of. Just.
Right. I don't think they're hiring me for the advertising campaign for that.
Well, you know, you could be little Jess, you know? I don't know.
If you think you're going to kick off within 10 years, we'll pay you.
I love that you say things like that because I think it's what we all think, you know.
Just don't say.
I'm sending this money out. What good is it to me? I'm going to be dead.
Yeah.
But there are features that you can access when you're alive, especially in some form of permanent insurance. But yeah, just know what you've got. Use it to protect your assets. Use it as an estate planning tool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I hear this often. People say, well, I'm going to leave my house to my son or daughter. Now, if you leave it to your spouse, it's not such a big deal. But you're leaving it to a child. If you haven't done a life estate, a legal document to do that,
mm-hmm.
then, you know, they're inheriting your house. Well, that's fine. But now your will is in probate, maybe for 6 months, maybe for longer. Just because you have a will doesn't mean they get the money immediately. It has to go through probate court.
Right. And are they going to have the money to run that?
Yeah. A mortgage, repairs, whatever. And the life insurance, you know, they'd have in a week, 10 days in mm-hmm. their hand, tax-free.
All right. Well, let's get your phone number. There's a lot to this. So let's get your phone number if people have questions.
Sure. It's 413-773-3333.
All right. Perfect. You can also go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back next week with another episode of the Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, right here on WHMP. Thank you.
Thank you, Jess.
Have you heard about Get the Tea? It's an online herbal supplement company with high quality standards. You cannot find these in stores. They carry cleansing teas and targeted herbal supplements for all your health needs. Go to getthetea.com today to order yours. Health shouldn't be put off. It should be a priority. And check out their specials page for sale items. That's getthetea.com. Enter code TEA123 for 10% off exclusively for my listeners. Getthetea.com, code TEA123. Order today.
This is Frances Rayum, the Money Doctor. Now you can become 100% debt-free, budget successfully, and retire well, all under the Hug Your Money umbrella.
If I don't blame her for what happened, I blame myself. As long as I'm working and making some money, I'm happy. Rather than argue with her about stuff, I would just say, oh, whatever, do what you need to do. And the same thing for her sometime. The friction, and it was just causing trouble in our relationship because I wanted to say, we don't have the money for this, you can't buy that. But yet, I don't want to deny it to her.
Because I do all the books, he has no idea about the budget. He has no idea what I have to do to manage a budget. Actually, I don't believe very much in fairy godmothers. But mama.
Debt, budget, retirement. HUG works best when we work together. Schedule your free consultation with a Hug Your Money coach today. Visit HugYourMoney.com.
Hug Your Money. So unique, it's patented.